Welcome to Car Wash, the podcast, your source for real stories and real business insights from the experts, both in and out of the car wash industry. So put it in neutral, feet off the brakes, and take your hands off the steering wheel. Here is your guide on this journey, Car Wash Magazine Editor-in-Chief, Matt DeWolf.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Car Wash the Podcast. This is the podcast that makes you a better car washer and a slightly better human being. Today on the show, we've got a special conversation for you. We're going outside of the car wash industry to really get some unique perspective because that's where some of the best ideas come from, right? So if we're only looking at our industry, we're never going to see the bigger picture. So today, to help us have some of that big picture conversation, we're going to dive into some trends and some labor challenges. We've got Alex Chasovsky. But first, a quick word from our sponsor. Hey, we all know how important growing and retaining membership revenue is today. And with Rinsed, the car wash CRM, you've got a complete toolbox to help make it easier for you to do just that. Rinsed has e-commerce features that help 10x your online sales, and you can convert more leads into paying customers with email and text message marketing campaigns. Pair that with tools to boost customer LTV by 20%, and you've got a pretty stellar solution that integrates directly with all major car wash POS systems. Rinsed, the car wash CRM. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Hey, I'm excited for this because sometimes, you know, you can get so focused on your day to day that you forget to kind of look up and look out. And so you get that fun job of helping us look up and look out. What's going on? What should we be kind of watching or looking out for?
Yeah, of course. So I think I'll start with the latest news. This week we had two banner reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics talking about kind of the situation in the labor market, and both of them were stellar. They blew past expectations. So earlier this week, we saw that job openings actually increased to 10.1 million in the United States, and the expectations were that they were actually going to decrease to about 9.5 million. So we had a kind of complete reversal in that trend of slowing job openings growth. It was certainly a positive news to say that the job market remains resilient and companies remain optimistic and continue to look to add to headcount and add that labor to their workforce that they so need to continue growing. Then this morning, as of Friday, June 2nd, we had the Bureau of Labor Statistics report on the jobs added in the month of May. So it's very fresh data. And that also blew past expectations. We saw 339,000 new jobs added. That compares to just over 290,000 last month. And to put that in context for folks, the expectations have been that it will have declined to 190,000. So not only are we blowing past those expectations, but, you know, historically speaking, pre-pandemic, a good month for the labor market was when we added 200,000 jobs. So we are so far above the mean, you know, we're certainly not in any kind of recession territory when it comes to the workforce.
Well, that's interesting, right? Because everybody has been pretty doom and gloom for a while, and that's just not playing out. What's going on? Like, what are we missing?
Yeah, well, obviously doom and gloom sells, right? You have media that covers the negative aspects. A perfect example of that was all of the talk of layoffs, right, that we heard earlier this year. Obviously, those were concentrated in a couple of key sectors, high tech and the financial sector, right? High tech, simply because they overhired during the boom period of 2021, 2022, and now they're kind of coming back down to normal headcount levels. And then the financial sector obviously hurting from the interest rate hikes that we've seen. So mortgage brokers, you know, people in residential and non-residential construction, those are areas that were subject to weaker demand as a result of higher interest rate environment. And so they were kind of normalizing their headcount to deal with the supply demand challenges that they face in their industries. But if you were to take all of those kind of headline job cut announcements, they total about 100,000 people. And I'm not by any means taking it away at the personal level. Obviously, it hurts to lose your job and it's very disorienting and it's discouraging for the individual. But when you look at just the month of May, the fact that we added 339,000 jobs, that's more than triple all of those layoffs combined. It puts things into context for people a little bit. And so I think that it's really important for you to understand that you've got to cut through some of the noise as a business leader, as a decision maker, and ask, you know, what is the agenda of the person putting out the information? Are they looking to just increase eyeballs and sensationalize things? Or are they doing an unbiased and fair perspective of what the markets are actually doing and providing you with sound business advice? So that needs to be at the forefront of every car wash operator, owner, and anyone involved in the industry as they look at economic data that they read online or see on television or read in newspapers.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to like, well, okay, so what? Like, okay, yeah, there's a headline that, you know, 50,000 people are getting laid off. Well, all right, hold on. Give me a minute. Let me back up and look at that at a bigger picture, right?
Yeah,
so I mean, step back from it.
That's right. The labor force in the United States, prime age labor force, is 166 million people, right? Like these are the actively working people. So there's some perspective that needs to be had in that regard. Another great example of this was all the talk of recession, right? I mean, we constantly hear that R word, and our immediate reaction is doom and gloom and fear and anxiety. What does this mean for my business? What does it mean for me personally? We heard it starting in early 2022. Remember Q1 and Q2 of 2022, we had consecutive quarters of slight decline in GDP, which is the broadest measure of economic activity. But when you look at that, clearly that was not a recession, even though by technical definitions, it matches what is required. There's a body called NBER, the National Bureau of Economic Research, that has been looking at economic data, and they look at about a half a dozen different metrics, and they haven't called a recession. And so again, you'll hear the word recession and you'll immediately start to have these flashbacks to either 2020, right? Or 2008, 2009. We're not anywhere near that environment. So yes, we are on the backside of the business cycle. Yes, economic growth is slowing, but that was always bound to happen. We can't sustain what was going on in 21 and 22 forever, right? So we are coming back to something that's a little bit more sustainable, a little bit more of a match between supply and demand. And that means that the consumer will retrench somewhat. And you know, that obviously has implications for the car wash industry, that people will make more selective decisions about how they spend money. But there's nothing catastrophic in the future. So when you're talking about strategizing, planning for long-term growth, yes, focus on cash flow in the near term, recognize borrowing costs are going to be high because of high interest rates, but you still want to stick to your growth strategy, your expansion plans, make sure your workforce is there and continue to be, you know, as good as you can when it comes to talent strategy, and you'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tempting to kind of stop everything, right? You're like, it's getting really hard and maybe we should just not do all these things and let's just stop. But really, that's the time when you should really kind of lean into your strategy and make sure that you're focused on it so that you don't get off track and start making decisions that are based in fear and not based in data and in what's actually going on.
I could not agree with you more. I mean, first of all, I think it's important to remember that being counter-cyclical or going opposite the herd, right, is oftentimes the solution. If you think back, for example, to 2008, 2009, right, the people that were buying in at the low point, whether it's stocks or property or businesses, I mean, just a few short years later, they were sitting very, very pretty, right, in terms of the turnaround and asset prices and the kind of wealth that they were able to generate. So you don't want to just follow what everybody else is doing. And simultaneously, you have to make sure that, you know, your contingency plans are in place, right? Yeah. The best of the best companies have a plan of action. Okay, if my business is down 5%, here is what I'm going to do. If my business is down 10%, these are the levers that I'm going to pull. If it's down 20%, here's the... So they have a pre-planned course of action and they're being, you know, not just reactive, but proactive in figuring out how they're going to deal with the various situations. Those tend to be the companies that thrive and emerge out of downturns much faster than everybody else. So going back to your original question, right, like the macro landscape. Yeah, I think that there's going to be ongoing slowdown there, right? It's part of the natural business cycle process. I follow a lot of different leading indicators for the macro environment, and they're certainly pointing to further downside pressure through the latter part of this year, likely into probably 1Q of 2024, before we start to see the emergence of that next rising trend. So I think what people need to do is they need to be prepared for more negativity in the press, but at the same time, that this is going to be relatively shallow, fairly short in terms of duration, this low point in the business cycle. And they need to be thinking about what's on the other side, right? That's how you get ahead of the curve, is you get 6 to 12 months in front of what's happening to your business right now and make sure you're putting plans in place to act on the information that's going to be available to you at that time.
Yeah, I love that advice, because it can be a lot, right? I mean,
yes.
Especially in this industry where things have been going gangbusters for a while now. Mm-hmm. It can really, like, any kind of slowdown can feel like, oh my gosh, the bubble happened. We're popping. Yes. And it doesn't have to be like that. I mean, it's not there. There's still plenty of room in this industry for more entrance into the business and more growth. We've not yet seen real saturation. So don't be afraid, friends. Don't be afraid.
That's right. And one other piece of advice that I would really stress at this point in the cycle is shift the focus from revenue growth. I mean, top line expansion has been top of mind for the last couple of years. You really need to focus on profitability metrics, right? With inflation where it is, cost of labor continues to rise. In May, it was up 4.3% year over year. So, you know, your people are going to continue to ask for more money, and you have to be willing and able to give more than just a 2%, you know, cost of living adjustment kind of increase if you want to keep your folks, because there's plenty of opportunities, as I alluded to earlier, for them to jump ship somewhere else. Your materials are likely going to remain expensive. You know, cost of doing business is going to be putting pressure on your bottom line. And so you have to make sure that you're staying profitable while you're also trying to grow the business overall.
Well, and one of the key things there, I think, Alex, is that as you kind of double down and look at profitability, it's a really nice opportunity for you to make sure that you're making the right decisions for your business based on your values too, right? Because you can look back and say, what kind of company did we say we were going to be? And how did we say we were going to show up for our people in these moments? And you can make decisions around both profitability and your company kind of mission, vision, values. And at the end of that day, you come out and you're highly profitable. You've got happy people and you've got happy customers. And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. You mentioned at the beginning, you know, that this podcast's goal is to help them be maybe a better person. Well, certainly when you treat your people well and everybody benefits from the positivity in the business, that's just a really good feeling to have. And you know, you're impacting people's lives, right? So it's also very pragmatic in the sense that, you know, the next generation of workers, if you look at the younger millennials, the Gen Z generation, they really care much more about things like, how does your employer treat its workers? What kind of philanthropic and community activities are you getting involved in? What is the mission of the business beyond just making money, right? They need a reason to work there other than the paycheck. And so companies that address that proactively, I think, are going to come head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of being able to attract and retain the talent they need to continue growing.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole skill set is changing in terms of what does it mean to be a manager. You're not really a manager anymore. You're not managing people. It's really more about leadership.
Yes.
You have to be able to lead people, because that's what this up and coming group of talent wants. They want to be inspired and moved and led and feel like you have some interest in them. And you can't do that if all you're doing is managing minutia.
Yeah. And this actually brings up a really interesting point. So I've been consulting with companies for more than 20 years. And one of the things that really strikes me every single time is that the way that we tend to promote people into positions of management and leadership really has nothing to do with managing people, right? Oh, you're a good production line worker? Great. You're now the production manager. You're good at sales? Great. You're now the sales manager. And the expectations, obviously, are totally different when you start to manage people. So companies need to realize that investment in people management training for particularly that mid-layer of managers that haven't had that training in the past is absolutely crucial to good morale, to company culture, to the ability to retain workers. And so if your organizations have not done that and they find themselves to be in a little bit of a lull, right? Maybe not as busy as they were before, it's a perfect opportunity to put some money to work with great ROI, where you get the management and the leadership training for your staff that helps across the business.
Yeah, the most successful car wash organizations, the most successful organizations, period, spend the time and the money on their people.
Absolutely. Could not agree with that mentality more. Absolutely.
Alex, let's lean into the people side a little bit. So you alluded to early in this conversation that, hey, lots of jobs. So knowing that there are lots of jobs out there, how can we make sure that we are attractive, right? Like what do we need to be kind of focusing on? Maybe a couple of things to help make sure that we're getting the talent we need.
Yeah, I think it's a really important element that every business leader really needs to ask themselves, like look themselves in the mirror and say, why would somebody want to come and work for me? Like, what are the actual reasons? You know, this old adage where if you find yourself in an elevator with a potential hiring authority, like the owner of a business, and you got to come up with this like 2-minute pitch that you have to sell yourself to the business. Well, that's been really turned on its head. And now it is the companies that are having to sell themselves to potential candidates. Because if you look at the ratio, like right now, there are 1.7 jobs available for every person looking for work. So it really is a plethora of choice and opportunity for potential employees. So what we've discovered, Miller Resource Group that I represent is a recruiting agency. And so we deal with this every single day. So one of the things that we've discovered is that the company really needs to treat talent attraction as a sales and marketing function. They've got to develop a pitch, make sure everybody within the business is able to communicate the pitch effectively. And the pitch really needs to focus on four key areas of the business. It is, what is attractive about the industry that we're in? Why do you want to come and work in this market? Why are the products and services that we bring to the marketplace going to help you be successful as an employee in this industry? The team that you'll be joining is oftentimes not highlighted, but it should be, because you already have a bunch of winners on your team, a bunch of individuals that achieve goals, they create success. So stress the fact that this person is going to be joining this winning team. We are attracted to success and we want to join success. And these are the people that are going to be in our professional network, right? And then the last element that I alluded to earlier is the mission of the business. What do you do that goes beyond making money, that makes somebody feel good about coming to work for you every day? If you can take those notions, package them into an effective, eloquent statement that you can bring to the marketplace, and that means on your website, through your recruiting practices, any marketing activities that you do, and your people, word of mouth advertising, then I think you're going to be able to attract the talent that you need.
Okay, so let me take a shot at recapping this for people. So, if you're looking, number one, right, treat it like sales and marketing. I love that advice. Yep. I think that's really important, because you don't put in the effort, you're not going to get what you want.
That's right.
But it's why this industry, why this company, why this team, and then kind of why this what's my purpose? What's the purpose? And so don't get that purpose piece too far up the chain. Make sure you have that as its own kind of element of that. But yeah, so why industry, why company, why team, what purpose?
That's right. Yeah, that's okay. The key step one, right, to getting the message out there, to making and drawing people in so that they want to actually apply to your positions. Step two is recognizing that every candidate is different, right? The way that we have been interviewing people in the hiring process is outdated. It is generic. It is repetitive. It's the same conversation across a spectrum of different candidates. We have to understand that people are motivated by different things. So one of the things that we do at Miller Resource Group is every candidate that we talk to, we fill out something called a CLAMPS profile. CLAMPS is an acronym that stands for challenge, location, advancement, money, people, and security. And we basically just ask people, rank these six things in order of importance to you. So some people will put money, others will put advancement, others will put job security or the team or whatever it might be, right? And then you're able to tailor the conversation that you have with that candidate to talk about the things that they care about so that there's alignment of thought, alignment of purpose. And that means that the likelihood that they will actually accept a job offer that you give them is going to be that much higher. It's a very simple thing to do. It doesn't take much time. Before you have someone come in for an interview, send them this questionnaire, ask them to rank the things, and then share that insight with the hiring authority that's going to be having the conversation and suggest that they tailor the conversation to the things that the candidate cares about. It's very effective, and it increases the likelihood that that person will actually join your organization multiple folds.
Now, the flip side of that, Alex, is make sure that you're truthful, right?
Yes,
now,
of course.
If somebody's like, hey, I'm, you know, advancement is really important to me, and you say, hey, we've got lots of opportunities, and then they show up and there's no roadmap, there's no talent journey map, there's no room for advancement, you know, they're stuck on the bench, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, and being truthful is both a moral obligation, as far as I see it, by business leadership, but beyond that, it really is a business decision, because if you do that and then somebody joins and then leaves 3 months later, the cost that you have incurred in terms of lost time and productivity, in terms of actual dollars spent on the recruiting process, is so astronomically high. I mean, it's like double or triple the first that first year salary for that individual is the total cost of having to refill that position. Yeah. So it's both morally imperative, and from a business perspective, it's a must do because it really affects the bottom line.
Well, it just goes back to, you know, your analogy of, you know, start treating your talent recruitment like sales and marketing. Well, a big part of sales and marketing is your brand, and what's your brand like, and how does that show up? And that's on that side. It's like, you know, we tell watches all the time, hey, make sure that the stuff you're putting out to your potential customers, when they get on site and they see that experience, that it matches up. If you're talking about clean and fast, everything on that site better be clean and fast. If you're talking about great pay, great people on your team as a recruitment strategy, that brand better come through. When those people join you, that better be true.
You're absolutely right. And you mentioned pay. I think it's an important component of what's happening right now. So most organizations, their pay strategy is still, I think, kind of pre-pandemic era, meaning that kind of, this is what we've been paying people, this is what we're going to continue paying people. But the market has moved so much in the last 2 years and continues to evolve very quickly based on the latest data. They need a reliable, independent third-party tool to confirm what the market rates are, both for incoming candidates and to make sure that they can keep track and make sure that they're paying competitive rates to the people that are already working there. One of the things that I've been doing for many organizations is doing a benchmarking analysis of all of the people that work at the company and identifying the ones that are at least 20% below market rates, so that they can engage them in proactive conversation and say, look, we recognize you're below where you need to be. We want to help you get there over time. We might not be able to do it all in one fell swoop, but let's talk about some other things that you value. Maybe it's a few days of additional PTO or some flexibility of schedule or something else that I can give you as an organization that will kind of fill the gap temporarily until we can get you right size in terms of pay.
Yeah, that's really good advice, because you're right. I mean, so much has changed in the last 3 years. Obviously everybody's kind of caught off guard by the whole thing. And now it's like, well, how do you go back? How do you reset the table? And that's a hard conversation to have, right? Like, hey, I want to re-benchmark my entire team that's been with me for 15 years. Uh-oh, that's scary.
It is. But I think the new reality of the labor market today requires less of the traditional power dynamic where I'm the employer, you're the employee, and it's kind of a forced projection down. I tell you what's going to happen, and more of a strategic partnership. Like, yes, as an organization, I'm going to tell you what I need from you for me to be able to achieve my goals. But at the same time, I'm willing to listen to what you need as an employee from me. And I will be doing everything I can to actually meet you halfway and provide you the things that you need in order for you to be successful in your personal life. That type of partnership is so much stickier than the traditional power dynamic that exists. Companies that get it and are willing to be flexible and open-minded and adapt new policies and techniques are going to thrive, whereas everybody else is going to be left behind in the dust.
Yeah, great stuff. Great stuff, Alex. Hey, I've got one last question for you.
Sure.
And I like to ask everybody this one. This can be related to the conversation we just had, or it can be just personal advice.
Okay.
Alex, what is one thing that we can all do today that's going to make us better tomorrow?
That's a great question. One thing that we can all do today that will make us better tomorrow. I think the answer that I will give has to do with being willing to evolve, right? Mm. I think I find a lot of people are stuck in a particular mindset, and they are not willing to budge, despite what data or new information might be available to them to sway their opinion. And so the notion that you have it all figured out and that you have all the skills that you possibly need and that you don't need to continue working on yourself both as a professional and as a human being, I think we have to discard that. The world is evolving and changing at a pace that is really, frankly speaking, very difficult to keep up with. But if we commit to the notion that I will continue to wake up every morning and do better, I will take in new information, I will evolve my thinking and my mentality when it comes to different things, whether it's personal or professional, and I will continue to strive for the best I can every day, and that's being open-minded and willing to evolve, learn, and grow, I think people are going to be better off over time.
That's great advice, Alex. I mean, life is way more fun when it's changing all the time, I think. I mean, I'm a weirdo. I love change, but, you know, it's way more fun.
The only constant is change, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's right. Hey, Alex, thank you so much for joining us today. I think our listeners are going to get a lot out of this conversation. I think it's really timely. And we're going to have to check back in with you in 6 months and see if these the data is all playing out.
I don't know if you want to provide my contact information if they wanted to reach out to follow up on any of the stuff that we talked about. Our website is millerresource.com. My email is alexc@millerresource.com. You can hit me on LinkedIn. I'm always posting updates on data that are impartial, kind of trying to be very pragmatic and fair about the way that I analyze things. So I invite people to connect with me on LinkedIn and continue the conversation. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Alex.
Take care.
Car Wash the Podcast is your source for real stories and real business insights from the experts, both in and out of the car wash industry. Our show helps investors, owners, operators, and managers think about ways to enhance their business. Our podcast is a free on-demand audio program that provides information on the latest trends impacting the industry, tips from successful industry leaders, and inspiration for our listeners.